Indivisible San Francisco and several other LGBTQ plus groups are hosting a trans ally rally Saturday during Pride weekend, marching from Embarcadero Plaza to a rally at Civic Center. Organizers say the event is meant to defend transgender rights amid what they call efforts by the Trump administration and local governments to erase the community. Their demands include full funding for San Francisco's transgender district, trans youth and housing programs, and the city's Office of Transgender Initiatives. They're also calling for protections against gender-affirming care bans, sports bans, and restrictive bathroom laws. The rally comes the same weekend as the city's annual Trans March, held every Pride weekend since 2004. That march took place this afternoon and is considered one of the largest transgender events in the world. We'll have coverage from that Monday. KPFA News Director Lauren Schmidt spoke with Indivisible organizer Bev Litkin about this weekend's rally and the precarious position the trans community currently finds itself in.
Pride weekend in America's gay city, queerest city. What can we expect to take place on Saturday?
Okay, so there's a march and then a rally. And so the march starts at Embarcadero. And then we depart down Market Street and we assemble at the People's March stage near the Pride Festival. And then we have a number of speakers from all across every letter of the LGBT community. We'll talk about solidarity and why we're all in this together. LGBTQIA plus rights, feminism, male loneliness, it's all the same issue, really. It's about how we have these narrow ideas of what men and women are supposed to be. And if you don't fit in those, then what? Are you allowed to be free? Or should you be punished by other people and the law?
You know, the event starting at Embarcadero Plaza will march to the People's March stage at Civic Center. There's going to be a rally. And there are calls to actions for allies. Can you speak to some of your demands?
Yeah, we have been embroiled in several funding battles because it's very cheap for politicians to pass a resolution saying that San Francisco is a sanctuary city. It's very cheap for Mayor Lori of San Francisco to say how he's going to backfill HIV prevention and treatment funding that the federal government cuts. But then when it comes time to actually pass a budget, he does a 30% cut to services, breaking his campaign promise. Governor Newsom, longstanding LGBT ally, it's kind of how he made a name for himself, was being a gay marriage ally. But then lately, he's been courting the right wing, and it's terrified a lot of people because we don't know if he's going to do what he said he might do on the right wing podcasts and veto the funding for the trans community. We have several funds, one of them for security for LGBT events, because in this environment of hate, it's really hard to keep people safe. And we have funding for gender affirming care, because even in blue states, the federal government's financial warfare means that hospitals are shutting down gender affirming care for our children. That one's kind of personal to me because I am trans. And going through the wrong puberty when you don't have to is a special kind of torment that leaves lifelong emotional and, worst of all, physical damage to a person. So that's what's behind all those talking points when and being a political football is real children who just want to grow up and have a normal life as their correct gender. But we are fighting for funding to make sure that trans kids and trans people can get the care they need in California.
Absolutely. You know, this theme of allyship, right? And calling on demand, you know, even outside of local lawmakers and federal lawmakers, there is a call for allyship because it is not opinion to say we are seeing unprecedented attacks on the trans community. Aaron Reed, a trans journalist, has a bill tracker that shows and highlights this unprecedented rise. And I'm wondering if you could speak to, you know, in addition to folks attending this rally, what allyship really looks like on the ground in practice with everyday people and individuals.
There's been discourse for as long as I've been politically active about real allies versus performative allies versus even arrogant allies who, like, they tell marginalized people what they think they should be doing. And so some of the basics of allyship is just listening, listening to trans people's stories and what do they want you to do right now? What do they need you to do? And as a trans person, I can tell you that one thing is just having the conversations that we can't, because they happen in places where we can't go, or they happen when we're not around, or if we did talk about it, they wouldn't listen. I think the two most important things that cis straight people can do is cis women. If anyone starts bringing up the trans predator boogeyman, you just say that I feel safe in a locker room with trans women. If you have a personal story to share, definitely go there. Talk about how, like, I don't know, she had great lipstick, or let you borrow her hand lotion. And then to the guys, I think the same thing. Again, trans women are the boogeyman, and men have a lot of pressure to always appear straight. So, cis men, you can tell people that it's not gay to be attracted to a trans woman because she looks, talks, feels, acts like a woman. It's not gay for a man to love a trans woman. That's it. And we definitely have to remember just the full spectrum of trans people. We are human beings, and so that means we're different. There's many different kinds of trans people. There's trans men, trans women, folks who are some flavor of non-binary. There are folks who are indistinguishable from an ordinary man or woman, as most people would expect. There are trans men and women who look a lot like the gay community and really have fun with their gender. We're not a monolith, we're just people. And I think maybe another one is Harvey Milk has this really great speech going through basically every minority. And he talks about the Black community shouldn't be judged by its myths and criminals. The Italian community shouldn't be judged by its myths and the mafia. The Asian community shouldn't be judged by its myths and criminals. The gay community shouldn't be judged by its myths and criminals. And the same thing for trans people. The trans community shouldn't be judged by its myths and criminals. So when most of the attention goes towards myths and criminals, you should talk about the more human side. Somebody you know, perhaps, or just something you know, like a fact that's humanizing. Because most of us are just people. We're not the boogeyman.
To your point about dropping knowledge and facts, I think of Elliot Page's new documentary recently highlighted on Democracy Now that shows that animals within in the natural animal kingdom and even plants, some species naturally change sex during their lifetime. And nature lives outside of this binary that people are trying to oversimplify when we speak about gender in the mainstream, especially in politics. And I think that's important to note. And also, when you refer to the, term, quote, boogeyman, I think of two different 1%. I think of our vibrant trans community that makes up roughly 1% of the population. Meanwhile, there is another 1% of the population that we can draw ties to issues that are widespread in our community that that population has created. And I'm referring to billionaires. So do you see a correlation there of this distraction of antagonizing queer bodies and communities when we should be utilizing collective action to a different 1% that people could argue do cause harm and destruction across the country and the globe?
Attacks on women and attacks on the queer community are one of the oldest authoritarian tricks in the book. Because going back to Caesar, going back all of history, authoritarians win with divide and conquer. They want you to let them throw one minority to the wolves, then the next, then the next. The minority always changes, but it's the same trick. They tell you lies that different means dangerous. In fact, that 1% you're talking about invested, I think, about $1 billion and 10 years to craft the best lie they could that would get you to turn on trans people. After the North Carolina bathroom bill got overturned, they discovered that children is one of the best lies to get people to hate trans people. They discovered that sports is one of the best lies to get folks used to discrimination. They cherry-pick the most extreme examples, the least flattering days of your life, and then that's what they just repeat over and over again. So, for instance, on the sports issue, this is from Aaron Reed's reporting, but every state that started legislating on the sports issue, it didn't appease them. It just started the ball rolling on more and more and more discrimination. Their strategists are on record saying they only care about sports as a way to get the everyday person to start thinking about trans discrimination, to get used to trans discrimination. I mean, one of the best ways to troll these people is to ask them, name your top five female athletes. Or you can ask about what sports issues they're even going after, like molester coaches or really terrible facilities for the women's team or unequal pay.
Absolutely. Unequal pay is a great example. One other thing I'd like to note about the 1%, though, we're seeing that in this progressive state, our governor opposing, a billionaire's tax, or the San Francisco mayor, not necessarily opposing, but expressing strong reservations. Does this go tie into those demands of allyship for the trans community? When we see, to quote Aaron Reed's reporting, some oil and gas conglomerates are helping to funnel the funds to endorse and pass anti-trans legislation.
The distraction feels really terrible when you're the one who's being attacked as a distraction. And so Ezra, who's one of the co-leaders and co-founders of Indivisible with his wife Lee, he has a great statement about this. This whole throwing minorities to the wolves is a strategic mistake. It's also morally repugnant to throw minorities to the wolves, and it's also bad strategy. Because right now, people are craving Democrats with spine. Like Newsom didn't even do much. He had some intern who had great Twitter games start calling Trump names, and people ate it up. But real spine would mean actually funding services for the trans community. Like real spine would mean putting enough pressure on hospitals that they don't capitulate. There's this whole part of the Democratic Party that's playing this losing game of throwing one minority to the wolves, and then what? When they ask for the next minority to be thrown to the wolves, will they just keep doing that till there's nobody left? That one has hurt more than anything our enemies could do to us. The fact that we have to watch our backs for a dagger from our friends, or from our so-called friends. And a lot of our organizing with Indivisible and many of our allied organizations has been pressuring Democrats to have a spine. And that's why the primary elections have been so important, because we need Democrats with strong moral fiber. Like in New York, the Democrats that Mamdani endorsed, they won big because people are hungry for politicians with strong convictions who are just going to say, I support trans rights. That's it. No hemming and hawing, no like focus groups. We have a nickname for politicians who are constantly watching the polls. We have a couple of them. We call them poll watchers, but my favorite one is weather vanes. They don't lead. They spin around from this poll to that poll, and the polls are based on a misinformed public. So Republicans tell lies for 10 years about how trans people are dangerous. The public starts to believe them, and then these weather vanes just point in that direction, thinking they can score some votes by throwing us under the bus. We need leaders. We need leaders who have a solid vision of a country where we are all equal, where we all get what we need. Like, we're not asking for much.
To bring it back to this weekend, this is exactly why this rally is happening. Pride Month, Pride Week, Trans March, followed by Dyke March. Any final words you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think the simplest one is that nobody's sex, nobody's gender should be a prison. We should all be free in small ways and in large ways. Like women, you like wearing pants? Well, trans men and lesbians helped win that right for you. And I think the male loneliness epidemic that we have. A lot of that is because masculinity is broken and we have a lot of work to do to fix it. And I think just like in the past, queer people are at the forefront, really leading the effort to make us more free. Feminism was an over a century project to change the definition of what woman meant. Like to somebody who could choose her own destiny, own her own bank account, get jobs, get paid equally. So we've been changing gender for forever, and you've benefited from it. And so please join us, and we will help each other to be more free.
Thank you so much, Bev. I appreciate you sharing with QPFA News what we can expect this weekend and why it is important for all to attend. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Indivisible organizer Bev Litkin speaking with KPFA News Director Lauren Schmidt. The Trans Ally Rally starts tomorrow at 10 a.m. at Embarcadero Plaza in San Francisco.